Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are going to be talking Bruce. We are going to be talking a little Jason Isbell. We're going to be talking podcasting. We're going to talk about Turnpike Troubadours. Julian's is joining me today. Julian, welcome to the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had connected on social media, and it turned out that we were at the same show that Jason Isbell was opening for the Turnpike Troubadours, and we didn't get a chance to meet in person, but we exchanged a few texts. You had told me before we hit record, this was one of your dream concerts.
Yeah, about the same time in the early, about 12 years ago or so, I became a huge fan of Jason Isbell and the Turnpike Troubadours. And I have been to see them individually a handful of times. And the idea of seeing these two together that were like my favorites of the last dozen years was just like a dream thing. I did not think it would ever happen. So as soon as I heard that, I had to get tickets.
Yeah, I am late on the Isbell bandwagon. One of my best friends has been talking about him forever. And I just, oh, yeah. And I picked up Nashville Sound and liked it. And I picked up Reunions and liked it. But I didn't do a deep dive. And when he was going to come to Dallas, he sold out here. But I got a ticket to see him in Austin last year. And I went, okay, you know what? I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to listen to a lot of music so I'll be ready. And just doing that deep dive, I went, holy crap. Man, this guy's something pretty impressive. And so I've been chasing him. So I saw him in Shreveport. And then when I saw he was going to be in Oklahoma City, I asked my wife, can I be greedy? And she goes, what do you want? I like, he's playing two nights in a row. So if I get a cheap hotel room, yes, go. And so I bought tickets not even knowing he was the opening act or the middle act. So it was a bonus because I knew nothing about the Turnpike Troubadours, and they were good. I really enjoyed them. They were a lot of fun.
And the interesting thing is the similarity between the Troubadours and Isbell is that Evan Felker, who writes most of the Troubadour songs, he and Isbell are great storytellers, but when it comes to the actual music, there's not really a whole lot of similarities. They're a little bit more on the country folk side. He's a little bit more on the rock side. So yeah, it's an interesting pairing, and that's why I never thought I'd get to see them together.
Yeah, and boy, it seems like that he was really appreciative. And I can't remember the guy who opened, but I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was pretty good too.
Oh yeah, he's one of the, he's had three albums and he's one of the up and comers. His name's Charles Wesley Godwin. Yeah. But yeah, his most recent album, Family Ties, is pretty amazing.
Yeah, my dream thing would be having Isbell open for John Hyatt.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I do a Hyatt podcast as well. And though Jason has said on social media once that someone asked the question, who's somebody that's done something for you that left you speechless? And he said, Springsteen did something for me and didn't tell the story. I know there is at least on Jason's side, an admiration of Bruce. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I always like to start, first off, tell us a little about yourself, Julian.
Yeah, Julian Spivey. I've lived most of my life in Arkansas. So I pretty much consider myself an Arkansan, was originally born in Florida. But I went to school at the University of Central Arkansas in Conway, Arkansas, where I still live. And I was a creative writing major, journalism minor. And one of my passions has always been pop culture. So I about 15 years ago, I started my own website with pop culture, and we cover music, movies, TV, sports. And basically, if it's something that I like, we do it. And then about 5 years or so ago, we also started a podcast with the website.
And what's the website?
It's the word on popculture.com, and you can also find the Word on Pop Culture podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts are.
I'm gonna get your origin story, but what do you think is the biggest change you've seen since you've been covering pop culture?
The fans of some of the bigger stars are ruthless. I'm talking like your Taylor Swift's, your Ariana Grande's, Lady Gaga's. I know that Springsteen has the most dedicated fan base that I've ever seen, but if you like disagree with something that he sings or says, they're not going to come for your throat like some of the younger artists' fan bases do.
I do think there is this passion of the Lady Gaga's team, Taylor Swift's team. There is this passion about it that is, it does give you the word fanatic, right? The reason why you get fan. Yeah, I think the biggest change I would say is the amount of pop culture. Like, there is almost impossible. It is impossible to see everything. If
Oh,
you're a
yeah.
big TV nerd, you just have to accept the fact that, yep, I'm sure it's a great show, and I'm sure if I took time to watch it, but I just haven't had time to do it. But yeah. Growing up in Arkansas, was there a lot of music in the household? Did you grow up listening to music?
Oh, yeah. We always grew up with music, mostly Jimmy Buffett. My
Okay.
dad is a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. And anytime we'd go visit relatives in Florida, Texas, Georgia, it would be almost Jimmy Buffett the entire car ride. And for a while there in my childhood, early teens, I was just so sick of Jimmy Buffett. I never wanted to hear him again. And then all of a sudden, I graduate high school, go to college, and Jimmy Buffett becomes one of my five favorite artists of all time. And now I listen to Jimmy Buffett as much as I do Bruce Springsteen.
Julian, I tell this story often on the podcast is I find two types of guest. The one that embraces their parents' music, and as they get older, they widen their vision, but just add to it. And the others that reject their parents' music till they're like, in their 30s, and then go, hey, that Johnny Cash guy dad liked, he ain't too bad. So it did not take you as long as some of us, but yeah.
And I knew even at the time that my parents had terrific taste in music. It's just that when you're in a car for 20 hours, you want to hear a little bit more than just Jimmy Buffett for 20 straight
Sure.
hours. Even today, I wouldn't listen to even my all-time favorites. I could not listen to them for 20 straight hours without wanting to throw a little bit more in there.
Is your father still with us?
Yes, he is.
Did you give him a call when Jimmy passed and had to share a moment?
We did, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to get him on my podcast, but he's more even introverted than I would consider myself to be.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, I think I'm gonna have to pass on that.
I felt that way when Merle Haggard died.
Oh, I'm a huge Haggard fan.
I felt like I lost my dad all over again. My dad was in 2011, we lost him. And when Merle died, it did feel like I lost my dad all over again because dad loved Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash. Dad was still alive when we lost Johnny, so I was able to call and talk to him. So yeah, that's pretty cool. Can you remember when you discovered Bruce? And what about his music spoke to you?
It's really hard to pinpoint. I
Okay.
know I would have still been at home, because the first time I ever really listened to him was my dad did have a, he had the greatest hits CD. So when he wasn't listening to Jimmy Buffett all the time, he would throw that in occasionally with some other stuff. So I remember hearing Bruce Springsteen, but it was really when I left home, left the small town of Mountain Home, Arkansas, went to a slightly bigger college town of Conway, and I just had that feeling of moving from a nowhere small town to improving my life, that I just really started to listen to the lyrics of Bruce Springsteen, and they just really spoke to me. That kind of the line, the final line from Thunder Road, "It's a town full of losers and we're pulling out of here to win," just to this day, it is probably my all-time favorite lyric.
Yeah, so you've talked about seeing a couple people live. I always like to preference the amount of times you've seen an artist live is not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. But for the record, do you count how many times you've seen Bruce? And if so, how many?
It's very easy for me to count because I've only seen him 3 times, and I listen to other episodes of this podcast, and I feel
Oh.
like an amateur. No, I know your preface,
Yeah.
but I know some people see him that many times in a week when he's on tour.
Yeah, I last year I was lucky. I got to see him. He did Dallas, Houston, Austin, and then he was gonna do Tulsa. And I got COVID after Austin, and so I missed seeing him in Tulsa. But yeah, it was 3 in 7 days was the most I've ever done. And I was like, and my wife's, "Are you tired?" "No, I won't bother me at all." That's nice. When did you get to see him?
The most recent time I've seen him was last year on the forgetting the name of the tour. Is it the
Yeah.
Letter to You tour?
Yeah.
I saw him in Kansas City, and it was literally the show after he had COVID, and I was scared to death that we were going to drive all that way. It's about a 5 hour, 6 hour drive for
Yeah.
us, and he wouldn't be able to perform, or some of the bandmates wouldn't be able to perform. And Jake Clemens actually had it that night, and
Yeah.
we missed him. But yeah, that's the most recent time, and we saw him once, 2015, on the River Tour when they re-released it in Oklahoma City. I can't remember the arena, but it's the
I
same
was
one where
there,
we saw,
yeah.
yeah, same one where we saw Isbell. And the first time was also in Kansas City. That would have been the Wrecking Ball Tour in November of 2012.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Letter to You and some of the later works?
I am amazed by them because you see so much fall off from so many artists as they get older. And Jimmy Buffett was, I hate to say it, he was a good example of that. And there's just not really any fall off for Bruce Springsteen in any of these later albums. And that, of course, that's me being biased. He's my all-time favorite artist, but I just feel like these are the kind of things that they're just as good as some of the stuff he wrote in the 70s.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart for Letter to You because of the time it came out. But I do think there is one of the things that's impressive is I don't feel like he's trying to duplicate anything. Magic is very different than Wrecking Ball, which is different than Born to Run, Letter to You. No matter what you do, even after Born in the USA, Tunnel of Love, very different. But yeah, I just think it's really interesting. So, go ahead.
Sorry, specifically with Letter to You, the fact that it's just so personal and emotional to him as a songwriter and performer, just yeah, it's just so special to, I think, most of us fans as well.
Yeah, because I had someone on the podcast earlier last year that talked about that. He had a theory that Bruce, he says he's having a conversation with his audience. And he went through this guest saying that Bruce taught us how to grow and how to hit maturity and adulthood during certain albums, and then how to handle success and marriage and others. And now then he says, I feel like he's teaching us how to deal with age and loss. And that's pretty cool. I think it's really nice.
And I think that's the sign of a songwriter who writes exactly what he's feeling as he goes along in his age. And sometimes musicians, they try to still do when they're older what made them popular in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and instead trusting your audience that they're going to go with you and work through there. All right, so we're going to get back to Bruce in a minute, but I did want to talk about, so why did you start covering pop culture? What was the origin of this?
It's just, oh, I've always been fascinated by it. I don't even
Yeah.
know why, because it's not really something my parents are all that fascinated by, especially the non-music aspects of it. And I don't know. I just it I may maybe I watched too much television growing up.
I know I did.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Talk about, so you decided to go through the origin story of how you started the blog and what you were looking to do.
Started it out of a little bit of anger.
Okay.
I was my college at the UCA, our college paper. I was the sports editor for a long time. And then I also wanted to create an entertainment section. We did that with the help of the editor of the newspaper, who is now my wife, April. Okay. And after she left, it went to different leadership and I lost this position that I had really created. And I was like, well, I still need an outlet to write about pop culture. So I started my own website.
What are some of the things that you're really proud of? Talk to me. Tell a little bit of stories about what you've really heard that you're proud of, that you've covered.
Oh, I'm really proud that every time I go to a concert, I've managed to sit down and write a concert review for each and every one. And there are some that back before I started the website that I really wish I had reviews of. I only got to see John Prine once. I wish I had reviewed that so I could have it as a keepsake. And I can see where I've gotten better and better at reviewing shows over 15 years. You would hope you would. So I just absolutely love those. And then other things that I'm proud of is the 50 greatest Bruce Springsteen songs I did for his 50 years in music last year that I sent to you. when I can sit down and do something of that magnitude, that length, it's the kind of thing I really enjoy, but it's very, very time consuming. So I probably don't do it near as much as I would hope to, because this is honestly, this is a hobby, because I have to have a full-time 40-hour a week job to maintain a living. So I really only have so much time I could dedicate to this website and podcast. And I just wish I had more time for that.
Yeah, I was really blessed for about 2 months. Toward the end of 2023, there was a change in my job and they weren't sure they're going to be able to keep me. So I started applying for another jobs. But in the meantime, they had me working graveyards. And really, the only thing I was there for is as leadership if something went wrong. I'm on camera looking at my other support agents and I'm editing podcasts while we're, and I was like, this is pretty cool. I'm ahead of the game versus now normally I have to do things. Yeah, I like that. Have there been, and this is, I'm sure, probably hard, but is there a couple of concerts that surprised you? I won't go the negative way of surprised you how they weren't very good, but surprised you on, wow, this is better than I thought they were going to be.
Yes, there's one in particular, and it was actually related to Jason Isbell, because in 2012-ish, after I became an Isbell fan, I noticed he was going to be opening a show at a local joint in Little Rock, which is a half hour down the road from me, and he was opening for a band called Dawes out of California. And I've never heard of this band before. And so we watched Isbell. He was terrific. We stay for Dawes and they get to a song called When My Time Comes. And everybody in the packed little room is just screaming this song. And it just was one of these terrific moments. And I've started listening to their other songs. And it's gotten to the point where they're now also one of my favorite bands. And I've gone to see them multiple other times since that show. So that's the one that truly sticks out to where I just really didn't know who this act was, and it made me a fan.
I think that's cool when that happens, when you go, mm-hmm. Wow, who is this person? So I'll have to check them out. I had not heard of them. Yeah.
And I will say I was already somewhat of a fan, but the guy who opened before Isbell at the shows we went to, Charles Wesley Godwin, right after that show, he announced a show at a venue in Little Rock, and I immediately bought tickets for that one, too.
Oh, yeah, I would go see him again. I thought he was really nice. And, yeah, I'll keep an eye out for him there, too. So what led you to start doing a podcast then?
It was just, I was listening to a lot of pop culture podcasts. I'm like, hey, this doesn't sound all that hard. And I just randomly opened up my phone one night after the Academy Awards to just recap the Oscars that night. And I went from there, and I just haven't stopped for now. We're in our sixth season. And any time a major thing comes up, I just like to talk about it with friends.
So who is on the podcast with you, Julian?
A lot of times it's my wife, who is, she's a journalist, so she's the professional journalist of the two of us. I have a friend, Tyler Glover, who we have on. I like to say he's the biggest Swiftie that I know, and he manages to slip a Taylor Swift reference into every show, and sometimes I want to smack him for it. But those are the two lead ones. Whenever we do movie stuff, we got a film critic here locally named Philip Price, who we like to have on. And usually when I do sports episodes, which we really probably don't do as many of those as I would like, because sometimes when pop culture, some of the people we have don't really get into the sports aspect. But I got a guy named Eric Fulton, who was a college buddy of mine that joins me.
So
it was really just a group of friends and my wife.
That's nothing wrong with that. Who are your sports allegiance?
My parents are both from Georgia. Atlanta Braves are my baseball team. Over the last decade or so, I've become a huge Golden State Warriors fan.
Okay.
You can understand the reasoning for that.
Sure.
And growing up in Arkansas, the NFL team that we got the most on TV was the Dallas Cowboys. So I am a Cowboys fan who is more disappointed in them than I'm excited to be a Cowboys fan.
So my son, of course, I'm from Dallas. He is quick to tell you he was born in 89. 2 weeks before Tom Landry was fired. So he says he's a Landry baby. Yeah, we were laughing at people that fans will say, bad Dallas fans, look, we've won a Super Bowl more recent than San Francisco.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
Jerks. They've been like,
yeah, they've been what, three times in the last decade?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they didn't win. You're like, we haven't even gotten close to an NFC championship game. Do not sit there. Quit relying on your things. Someone did post on Facebook, Bruce has been to more Super Bowls than the Cowboys have since the year, because he did the halftime show. And I said, yes, that's why Bruce never disappoints me. Dallas disappoints me every time. Yep. Yeah, so I feel your pain.
Congrats, though, on the Texas Rangers.
Yes, that was so nice. Joanne, let me tell you, and I've said this a couple times on the podcast, so skip ahead if you guys don't want to hear me talk baseball. But because of the rights, we don't get to watch the local team. So when the playoffs started, Chris and I, he's living at home right now, he's saving money to buy a house. He said, I'm like, I don't know anyone. He goes, I don't either. He says, but hopefully we'll get a chance. And so we got to watch every game together all the way marching through. And it was just when the Mavs won the championship, he was still in college, so we texted each other. But having the World Series and the Rangers, and of course, there was a time when we played hooky every opening day. When the Rangers were bad, you could get opening day tickets, and we would pull him out of school, and he and I would go to opening day. And so there, that was something pretty special, and it just was nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I was rooting for him. Being a Braves fan, we were a disappointment in the playoffs. So I started rooting for the Rangers because it's nice to see a team get their first title.
Yeah, it really is. And Chris's best friend their family is from Georgia as well, so they are big Braves fans. And similar, because of the Superstation in Louisiana, a lot of people did become Braves fans, because instead of the Astros, you got to see them, Atlanta. And so you got to be a fan. So I always feel a little happiness when I see them play well.
Yeah, it was very easy being a Braves fan in Arkansas because of TVS at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What have you learned most doing this pop culture and podcast?
That it's a long slog to build an audience. This is the number one thing that I've learned. And I'm experiencing it way more with the podcast aspect than I am with the actual website. I don't know why that is, but it's definitely been harder to gain an audience that way.
It is. I'd love feedback. And I've talked to other podcasters, and just as a whole, there isn't this culture of people sending emails to say, hey, Jesse, I really enjoyed your interview with Joyen, or let me tell you my first time seeing Jason Isbell or Bruce live. So yeah, I get that, where you really would want, I'd love to have a segment every episode of, oh, feedback and letters. Yeah. My Doctor Who podcast, we do have like two or three pretty regular contributors that send an email each time. And so that's nice. Oh, look, it's Sandy from Oregon. It's Holly from Wisconsin. It's Dave from Colorado. But yeah, I would love more just feedback of people, even if they didn't like something, just to say, hey, yeah, Jesse, this didn't work for me as much. Yeah.
I think people are more willing to share their feedback when they don't like something than when they do.
Yes, that is true. Sorry. Talk about your thought about picking those Springsteen songs. Talk about why you decided to do that. And let's talk about the process of what you picked and where you were going. Get inside your mind.
It's easy because since I was the only one compiling this list, it truly just comes down to my favorites. I know that I put the word greatest in the title, but honestly, when it comes down to it, it's pretty much my 50 favorite Bruce Springsteen songs. So there's really no methodology or anything real special to it. It's just these are the ones I identify the most with as a listener and a fan of Bruce Springsteen.
Did you try to rank them? Or did you yeah. just go, okay, so, and so talk to me that process, because when I've tried to do this in the past, what I've done is I've said, okay, that's a one as in number one, a two, a three, a four, or five. Mm-hmm. And I'll just randomly do that. Then mm-hmm. I'll sort and I'm like, okay, I've got 35 ones yeah. I need to go through. So talk to me a little bit about what that and. And well, how many times did you redo it?
The thing about me is I don't really like going back and
okay.
and editing things. Like once I just get it, it's there. And then every few years, I'll go back and be like, okay, I actually like with life changes and stuff, be like, oh, this one's actually should be higher than this one. Mm-hmm. But there's really no, I know what my favorite Springsteen song's been since really got into them. And then it just falls down from there. And honestly, there's when it comes to 15 through 30, there's probably not much of a difference. I just, it's where they fall at the time I'm coming up with it.
Yeah.
Which is why, honestly, you could, it would be easier to just do it in alphabetical order by song title or in chronological by yeah. year. But I don't know. I liked the 1 through 50 aspect of it.
Did, and remind me when you did this.
It was in November, I believe, of last right. year.
Okay. Hopefully, he'll put out a new album and you'll have to go, damn, yeah. this is going to break through my top 50.
The weird thing is, I did have some letter to you songs on there, I think two or three. But an album that I really liked of his recently was Western Skies. And yeah. I just couldn't fit a song from that album on the list. So I don't know. It's like, the newer stuff, it's harder to place because you haven't had years upon years of listening to yeah. it.
Yeah, Tucson Train would probably break my top 50. I don't know if it would mm-hmm. be top 20, but I would do that because I just really like Tucson Train. I agree with you. I really liked that album and enjoyed the film and kind of was jealous of everyone in that barn. Would my wife reached over and go, you'd love to be in that barn, wouldn't you? Yes, I would do anything to be in that barn. So what's next for the podcast? What else do you want to work on?
We recently did an episode after Toby Keith died last week. My wife and I compiled our five favorite Toby Keith songs. Hey, pay tribute to him. And the Oscars are coming up next month. So I'll have Philip Rice, our film critic, on. We'll mm-hmm. predict the Oscars. And I've got this thing, a few series that we do. One of them is called Fantasy Set List, where I take an artist and usually interview somebody and I have them pick 15 songs that if they could handpick set list for a show, they pick which 15 songs they would pick. And my wife and I actually did an episode of Fantasy Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band's set list last February before we saw him in Kansas City. So that's one of my favorite things on the podcast. We'll have to do a few more. I've got a friend who's a big Grateful Dead fan, so I'm going to try to get him to do that. Okay. And Jimmy Buffett's another one that I'm hoping to do that on.
Have you done ISPO yet?
No, we were hoping to do it before the show, but the Emmys and the Grammys and all yeah. that stuff are right around the same time, so we just felt like we had too much going on. But I want to do one for ISPO and Turnpike Troubadours.
I'll invite myself in if you ever want to do John Hyatt. We can join you and we could pick our 15 set list for Hyatt. I have done before Bruce announced the tour. I did do, and I think I did more than 15, but I did pick if I was doing the set list, what would I do and what eras I would want to cover and stuff. So that's a fun thing to do that. I can't wait to, I'll go back and check that episode. I'm sure that'll be great.
It's been a couple of years, but yeah, it should be easy to yeah. find.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Are there songs you haven't heard live from Bruce that you're still chasing?
Yeah. Having only seen him three times, I'm sure there's a handful, but the one that ranks highest on my list is Jungle Land. And it feels like one that he just doesn't do a whole lot anymore. So I'm sure that I'd probably have to chase quite a bit to get to that one.
Yeah, I think with Clarence being gone, they only bring it out a few times. And it is everyone goes crazy when he does, especially if he'll do Meeting Across the River into Jungle Land. That's pretty special. Yeah.
He seems to save it for his hometown shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The first time we saw, I think I mentioned earlier, my favorite song is Thunder Road. First time we saw him in Kansas City, he did not perform Thunder Road. And I thought that was one that he would do every show. It just seems like a no-brainer to me. So when he did that the second time we saw him in Oklahoma City in 2015, that instantly became my all-time favorite concert moment, just getting to hear my favorite song ever live.
So the first seven times I saw him, he did not do Thunder Road.
Wow, that's amazing to me.
I know. I was like, wait a minute, how? My first show was in The Rising, 2002, and then I did Devils in Dust. He didn't do it. And then with Magic, Working on a Dream, he had not done any of it. And then he was alternating Thunder Road and Dream Baby Dream. And every show I saw, he did Thunder Road, so I wasn't going to complain. But it is the only show. I've done 19 shows. And The Rising is the only show he's done every show.
Really?
Which I would not. Yeah.
It's hard for me to see him not doing Born to Run, a show.
Yeah, and it's because he didn't do it at the Devils in Dust. Because it was just him acoustic, and he did not do Born to Run. But
that
makes sense. But it is, if you would have thought, of course he's going to do that. But no, The Rising is the only song he's done every show. Yeah.
It's been exactly a year since I've seen him in Kansas City. And I'll never forget the woman sitting next to me. She wasn't a huge fan, but she just felt like she had to see him, and everybody should.
Yeah.
And she's, surely he's going to do Born in the USA. I'm like, man, he's definitely not going to do Born in the USA. I don't really know why he doesn't really do that, but he never does that one.
I've seen it live a couple of times. All right. So once again, audience, skip ahead because you've heard the story. But Julian has it. We're in Houston, and the show, a little over 3 hours, really good show. And it's an outdoor venue there in Woodland. And so we're outside in the concourse that's outside, open the sky. And I'd gone to the bathroom, and my wife was heading back yet. And this very drunk lady is going, "Is it over?" "Yeah, it's over." "It can't be over." "Yeah, it's over. He didn't do Born in the USA. I said, "No, he doesn't always do Born in the USA. It's his biggest hit." I know, but he just doesn't always do it. So since then, Julian, anytime he plays Born in the USA, I pull out my phone and I tweet, "Somewhere there's a drunk lady in Houston very happy."
Speaking of Born in the USA, Jason Isbell did a cover of it quite a few years ago. I don't know if you've heard that one.
I love Dead Man Town, that collection of Americana. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great version of that. I think the other song I really like off that collection is, I think it's Holly Williams. Yeah, Hank Williams' granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is... She does a great version of No Surrender. So yeah, absolutely.
I'll need to check that one out.
Yeah. It's Dead Man's Town is the, it's a collection of all Americana artists doing Born in the USA. They do all the songs.
So one song that I hadn't heard the first two times I saw Springsteen that I'm so happy to have heard when he did Kansas City last year was Backstreets. He didn't do that the first two times. So I guess every time I see him, he'll do another song I haven't
seen.
He'll
get you one off your pocket. Yeah.
I don't think Jungle Land's going to happen. And my other two are Devils in Dust and the Ghost of Tom Joad. I just don't really expect to see it.
If Tom Morello shows up, you got a good chance, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was able to hear Devils in Dust live when he did the tour, which is a good song. That's a great song. Yeah. That would be tough. I would like to hear the whole band do it. I'd love that. That'd be great. Yeah. So, Julian, what haven't I asked you that I should have?
Oh, we didn't get to my favorite album, but it should be obvious by now that it's Born to Run.
Yes. I had a friend once say that she said that she believes if there is an afterlife and you get to ask a spiritual being, whatever you call it, God, Jesus, Buddha, anything, hers would be, how many times have I listened to Thunder Road? Born to Run, absolutely one of the favorite. What do you think is an underrated album of his?
Magic. That came out my first or second year in college, right as I was getting into Bruce Springsteen. That's getting a little disillusioned in some of the politics of the time. Yeah. And that just really spoke to me. And one song, another song I would love to hear live that I haven't is Long Walk Home. I can't remember exactly where I had it on my list. I had my list up earlier, but my computer has died. But it's in the top 10, if not my top 5.
Yeah, that is a great song. I don't think I've heard it live. I would love to. I heard Girls in Their Summer Clothes once, which is one of my favorites because it feels like an adult Beach Boy song, right? Mm-hmm. It's like Bruce doing a version of Brian Wilson. So I love that. That's great. So before we get to the Mary question, if someone wants to reach you, how can they?
You can reach us at thewordonpopculture.com. You can always catch us on the Word on Pop Culture podcast. Like I said, you can find it anywhere, Spotify and Apple. And also our Facebook page, The Word on Pop Culture, is probably our most popular of all the social media sites. That would probably be the best places.
Yeah, listeners, please go to the page, like it. Go to iTunes and Spotify, give them a review. It really will make their day. Yeah. All right, Julian. So if someone is a fan of your podcast and they're checking this out, thank you. We always like to do cross-pollinization. But I end every podcast with the Mary question, which I feel very appropriate tonight since Thunder Road is your favorite song. Jay Armstrong is a retired honors English teacher, but when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and they would read it as if it's a poem, discuss it, talk about the themes and the imagery Bruce explores, and then he would ask his class at the end of the session, does Mary get in the car? So, Julian, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
First of all, I love that you do this. And I've never heard anybody talk about this until I listened to it on your show. Because to me, there is absolutely 100% she gets in the car. So it's, to me, the fact that there are people that even think that she doesn't, it's a town full of losers. You got to get in the car. Now, I know that his come on lines aren't that great with, hey, you ain't a beauty, but yeah, you're all right with me. But still, get in the car.
Yes. It's like my brother used to say, when you're going through hell, you have to keep walking because you're in hell. You have to keep moving forward. So, yes. Julian, this was a blast. Thank you so much. I am looking forward to checking out some of your podcasts. Let's do this again. We'll have to have some. And when you're ready to do a John Hyatt set list, let me know and I can make that happen.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Good. All right. Once again, tell them how to reach you.
TheWordOnPopCulture.com and the Word on Pop Culture podcast and the Word on Pop Culture Facebook page.
Very nice. All right, listeners, go check it out. In the meantime, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. I'm about to name some people who helped me keep this podcast going. They are the wonderful members of my Patreon group. I appreciate each of them. You can learn how to be a patron by going to patreon.com, look for Set Lusting Bruce, and for as little as $5 a month, you can support the podcast and get access to unedited episodes. And as little as $1 a month, you get a handwritten thank you note from me and a shout out at least once a month thanking you in an episode. So, Sean, David and Jennifer, Jeff, Sylvan, Liz, Yetta, Steve, Coach Randy, Rob, Bella, John, Betsy, Levi, Liz, Stephen, and Steve, Dale, Terry, Chris, and Mary. All of you are amazing, and thank you for being part of this wonderful group. You know I love you.
There we go. Another episode.
I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand. But I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at JesseJacksonDFW. The show is available at SetListingBruce. You can send me an email, SetListingBruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts. Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou Karen and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun-talking, hard-rocking, music-loving, album-ranking, fan-thinking, joy-spreading, lyric-reading, story-sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.